Good morning. I'll be your Greg today. My name is Al Haskell, and I want to welcome you to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. It's wonderful to see your smiling faces and the recovery from the excess turkey, if you're like me. Some would say I'm excess turkey. There are a variety of announcements about our church life and activities, and they're listed in our order of service. There's materials outside in the foyer to give you greater insight as to who we are and Unitarian Universalism as a whole. At this point, I would invite you to greet each other. Oh, I'm sorry. Stumbling. All right, stop. That's enough of that. Once again, this holiday season, LCUC will be providing Christmas gifts for the guests of Siena House. Am I saying that right? Siena House. The giving tree is up in the social hall, and if you'd like to participate, please choose a tag from the tree, purchase the gift, and bring it to church by Sunday, December 18th. Everyone is invited to join in decorating the sanctuary for the Christmas season also. So please join us Saturday, December 3rd to deck the halls. A big thank you to everybody who helped with cookie sale. We made almost $800. The remaining baked goods are available to buy after the service in the social hall. If you are visiting with us today, we particularly welcome you. There's a guest ledger out there. We'd love it if you'd sign that, and a variety of information, as I talked about before, out there. Also note there are some little blue flyers around for an orientation class that's coming up, and we encourage you to consider taking that class. If you're visiting with your children today, we'll have a story for all ages up front here, after which generally the kids will go off to their RE classes. You're invited to go both with your child or to stay in the service, whatever your desire. No small kids, so we're good. If you've been visiting us for a while and you're interested in considering joining, good thing. I encourage you to find me after the service or look for Jim, and we'll help you get on that path. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you introduced them, or if you brought yourself, this would be a great time to say hello. Alright, quick... Okay, so look for Jim. Stewardship asks you to ask yourself, why are we all here? Do you come into LCUC or do you come out of here? What makes your life and our community better? What helps you do more good? Do you desire to do or be more, or for us to be more? You know, guest Sunday, every Sunday, and it's often great when my friends and people I know that should come here come in without me inviting them. They don't. So who do you want to bring? Who could you bring? Who might you bring? Who could you just simply tell about us? It's at this time, phasers go unstun. I hope you find this morning service thought-provoking. Thank you.
call goes forth, an invitation to assemble here. Voices speak to voices, hearts to hearts, minds to minds, person to person. Come together for this hour. Hear the call. Accept the invitation. Participate. Consider. Acknowledge. Contribute. Commit. Enter. Rejoice. Join in celebration. And it is in this spirit this morning that we light our chalice. Our opening hymn is number 55, Dark of Winter.
Look in their order of service for our congregational in-gathering. I'll lead, and the bold print is where you respond. Let us rejoice in the hope of the season. Let us discover the time-honored testimony.
Light can be seen in the world's deep darkness. Warmth can be found in the world's bitter cold.
Let us hear the ancient promise. We will arise amidst the world's hatred. Peace breaks in on the world's strife. As in other times and places, the season's wonder can be fulfilled in our time. We must look if we would see. We must listen if we would hear. We must be moved if we would act. Our response bespeaks our gratitude.
And gives life
to common aspiration.
Thank you.
children to come forward for our story today. And the story is called Counting Blessings. Large and small, anybody who wants can come and join us. Having a little trouble with my mic. Good morning. Thanks for coming. We have a story today called Counting Blessings. It's by Debbie Boone. And this is the time of year when, while we may be encouraged in the larger world to go out and get things that we have, we take a little time to enjoy what we have. I'm happy. Do you know why? I've discovered the secret of happiness. Do you want me to tell you? Counting blessings. No kidding. Every day, anywhere, all the time. You know, things that you are thankful for, things that you are happy about, did you ever try not to laugh when someone was tickling you? Well, when you count your blessings, it's like getting tickled on the inside. Your frown, turns upside down, and your heart begins to sing. Come on, let's try it. I'll start with three things. With three, I'll go first. One, my eyes, so I can see all the blessings around me. Like, two, my fat cat Cleo. And three, who is asleep on my bed, which is actually number three, my bed. I mean the coziest place in the whole wide world. Now it's your turn. Count your blessings, 1, 2, 3, by yourself, here with me. Count the blessings in plain view, or close to your eye, or close your eyes and see a few. Count them standing on your head. Count them while you lie in bed. Keep a few in your back pocket. Tuck a few inside a locket. Count your blessings when you're blue. Count them when you're happy, too. When I first started, I wrote a few blessings down each day and I kept them in a box. 2 weeks later, I read them all at once. Wow, did I feel happy. Look how happy he is. Blessings that start with the letter P or any other letter, blessings that go from A to Z, a personal favorite. How many blessings can I count in a minute? Blessings that rhyme, this takes an expert. Thank you for the big green tree with the treehouse that Dad made for me. For all the toys and all the fun my friends and I have in the sun. There are no rules. No blessing is too big or too small. If you count it as a blessing, then it is one. Here's the deal. Think about things that make you sad. You'll be sad. Think about things in your life that make you happy. You'll be happy. Take it from me. Once you realize how full of blessings your life really is, you'll feel almost like you're going to explode. And that's great. Because that's when you start looking around for ways to become a blessing to someone else. A smile, a kind word, a helping hand, a hug. Hugs are the best. Blessings are like hugs from God to let you know how much He loves you. Counting blessings is like hugging God back. And that's our story. And who's going to carry the lantern today? Our time to express our joys and concerns. We ask that you be brief so that everyone who wants to can tell us how they're feeling today. And I'll light the first candle for the darkness that is upon our country, but inside of which is really a light to lead us on.
Gus, please light a candle of joy for my partner's recovery. The organ in question came out in one piece, and the pathology report came back that they got all the cancer. So we're very happy about that. And a candle of concern for my patients as I'm taking care of them. And so send some good energy my way, please. Thank you.
This is Chris. Would you light a candle of joy for Keith Mausner, please? He's doing really well in his recovery, and he's home from the hospital.
I'm Patty. Please light a candle of joy for my family. We just found out that my son and daughter-in-law are going to have a baby.
I'm Dave. Candle of concern, please. My sister-in-law's mother passed away very suddenly and left behind several kids and a family wondering what's next for them.
So. I'm Christy. If you could light a candle of concern for my sister, who's troubled about some things that several of her children are going through.
Mary, a candle of joy that the Packers are 11-0, and a candle of joy that they're not playing this afternoon, so I can go to Latin Peak for a run.
I'd like to light a candle in memory of my mother-in-law, who passed this week last year. She was just a gentle soul.
Let us join together in a time of thoughtfulness, of meditation, and prayer. Light of life, brighten all our days on our common journey between birth and death. Break through the clouds of despair that deaden our spirits. Penetrate the fogs of confusion that obscure our vision. Reveal to us the way that lies ahead in our allotted time and place. Holy light, in your light may we discover pathways to life more abundant for all. Sacred light, with your light may we envision clearly the ways toward peace and justice, compassion and mercy. Divine light, by your light, may our hearts and minds discover the greater good, encompass more beauty, find increased joy. Light of life, kindle our life's light, that we may live ways of gratitude and generosity. We offer thanksgiving and praise for the grace which brings us to life, the grace which enlivens all the days of our lives, the grace which will not let us go. And now, in silence, let us continue in this spirit of thoughtfulness and meditation and prayer. Amen. Our hymn is number 17, Every Night and Every Morn. I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.
Some to misery.
Our reading this morning is a poem by Richard Wilbur, "Love Calls Us to the Things of This World." Wilbur writes of awakening to a display of hanging, flying laundry. The eyes open to a cry of pulleys, and spirited from sleep, the astounded soul hangs for a moment bodiless and simple as false dawn. Outside the open window, the morning air is all awash with angels. Some are in bed sheets, some in blouses, some are in smocks, but truly there they are. Now they are rising together in calm swells of halcyon feeling, filling whatever they wear with the deep joy of their impersonal breathing. Now they are flying in place, conveying the terrible sweet of their omnipresence, moving and staying like white water. And now of a sudden they swoon down into so rapt a quiet that nobody seems to be there. The soul shrinks from all that it is about to remember, from the punctual rape of every blessed day, and cries, "Oh, let there be nothing on earth but laundry. Nothing but rosy hands in the rising steam and clean dances done in the sight of heaven." Yet, as the sun acknowledges with a warm look, the world's hunks and colors, the soul descends once more in bitter love to accept the waking body, saying now in a changed voice, as the man rises and yawns, "Bring them down from their ruddy gallows. Let them be clean linen for the backs of thieves. Let lovers go fresh and sweet to be undone. And the heaviest nuns walk in a pure floating of dark habits, keeping their difficult balance." Here ends our reading for this morning. In our utilitarian age of washing machines and automatic dryers, the aesthetic occasion for Richard Wilbur's poem, "Flying, Waving Laundry," hung outdoors to dry in the sun and wind, seldom occurs anymore. The poet will have to look elsewhere to find inspiration for the imagination and vision displayed here in Richard Wilbur's poem, "Love Calls Us to the Things of This World." It depends on one's perspective. I do not deny the advantage to the launderer of our modern labor-saving devices. And given my own apartment living, there would not be any way to hang laundry outdoors in the way that Wilbur celebrates. These utilitarian considerations should not obscure that we have lost something fundamental in our progress. We have lost something aesthetic and artistic and imaginative. It would be possible to write a poem, even a good poem, about the mechanized experience of automatic washers and dryers. However, it would be a very different poem from Richard Wilbur's. Love calls us to the things of this world. That is what I advocate today, the love of the ordinary, everyday, worldly events of life. I speak about a vision that beholds within the ordinary, everyday, and worldly an extraordinary dimension. Most important, within our vision lies the possibility of our good health. Within our imagination is the possibility of profound religious meaning. Within the power of our metaphors and symbols is the possibility to call us to the grace lying within the things of this world. Grace, that is, the gift of life itself and all the gifts within life. Life is grace, the gracious gift freely bestowed upon us. Life itself is the gift we receive through all of our senses. We experience the world in and through its many odors and sights and tastes, its sounds, its feel. We experience the world through our five senses. However, we know the world through the power of our imagination. Our imagination can convert or transmute the experiences of our five senses into life wisdom. The poet W.H. Auden writes of our imagination's servants, the five senses. He says, "Be happy, precious five, so long as I'm alive. Nor try to ask me what you should be happy for. Think, if it helps, of love, or alcohol, or gold, but do as you are told. I could, which you cannot, find reasons fast enough to face the sky and roar in anger at despair at what is going on, demanding that it name whoever is to blame. The sky would only wait till all my breath was gone and then reiterate, as if I wasn't there, that singular command I do not understand. Bless what there is for being, which has to be obeyed. For what else am I made for? Agreeing or disagreeing? Bless what there is for being. This is the imaginative word of wisdom. Bless what there is for being. This is the word of grace. The religious word of gratitude for the gift of life is bless what there is for being. We may be uncomfortable, unsure, awkward with this religious affirmation. We may not have the practice of converting the signals of our five senses into a religious understanding. We may not have a natural talent for seeing with religious eyes, or hearing with religious ears, or smelling with a religious nose, or tasting with a religious tongue, or feeling with a religious touch. All of these are common human deprivations of our age of broken myths and shattered religious vocabularies. We may be religiously tone deaf and religiously colorblind. However, if we do not have a natural talent, a God-given genius for the religious imagination, we can still learn to understand religiously. We can catch on by patient practice, just as we can learn any foreign language. Bless what there is for being. Bless it all. Bless everything without exception, for everything is interconnected and interrelated. This is the ecology of the gracious gift of life. Everything which is has a common and a related source. It is a religious task to experience the ecology of grace, whatever religious language we use to understand it. It is a religious work to interpret the gift of life in its wholeness rather than its fragmentation. It is a religious art to synthesize, that is, bring back together in relationship all which has been broken and fragmented. It is a religious genius to seek the universal connections which lie beyond every sectarianism. These are the elements of the religious interpretation of the human enterprise and adventure. Task and work, art and genius, say religiously with W.H. Auden, bless what there is for being. Well, you may ask, is that the religious answer? Is it the religious answer to the ineffable mystery that is being and life? Well, I think no, there is no satisfactory answer to the mystery. However, there is a religious reply, a religious response. What we cannot understand or explain, and when we cannot understand or explain, we can still be present. We can reply. We can respond. We can relate. And relationship is what lies at the center of religion, not explanations. Relationships marked by awe and love and gratitude, by confession and justice and forgiveness, by compassion and reconciliation and transformation. Religiously, what unites life is not that we can explain it all, but that we can relate to and celebrate the grace, this precious life gift that is entrusted to us, life's values, and our purposefulness and our relationships. Bless what there is for being. Another poem by William Blake speaks to what the blessing encompasses, and we sang that poem this morning. Every night and every morn, some to misery are born. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Joy and woe are woven fine, clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine. And then the hardest part of all, It is right. It should be so. We were made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, safely through the world we go. William Blake is not talking about the misery and delight that grows from human exploitation and injustice, or the human social arrangements that we can address and adjust and correct. Blake is referring here to the miseries and delights which arise from and within the terms and conditions of life itself. If we could correct every human injustice in the world, if we could usher in a utopian age, if we could reach the promised land, still infants would be stillborn. Still babes would be born with physical and psychic handicaps and challenges. Still young children would die from illness and accident. Still young adults would suffer disabling diseases of body and spirit. Still parents would die prematurely. Still there would be separation and divorce, tragedy and grief, accidents and mistakes. And still, sooner or later, each of us will die. And all of these and more are among the actual terms and conditions of life itself. Misery and delight. This is life. Joy and woe are woven fine and are inseparable. We were made for joy and woe. Both are built into life itself. And therefore, the pursuit of an ultimate human happiness is an empty and self-defeating mirage. The quest for complete human fulfillment is an illusion that we pursue at the expense of creative and productive living. Yes, it is difficult to accept that misery is built into life itself, as is all of life's sweet delight. We are confronted here by an unwelcome truth. It is helpful to keep in mind physicist Niels Bohr's insightful distinction. Bohr says, the opposite of a true statement is a false statement. But the opposite of a profound truth can be another profound truth. Yes, it is a profound truth, every night and every morn some to misery are born. And it is also a profound truth that every morn and every night some are born to sweet delight. And there is a further and a still more profound truth. You and I may be born to misery this morn or at this hour, and we may be born to sweet delight tomorrow morn or the next hour. And we all know both of these profound insights. Yes, such insights are difficult to remember, because our fantasies, our mirages, our illusions make us forgetful. The seeming polarity of misery and delight are resolved in the profound recognition that life is both misery and delight. We do not like it. It is not fair. And yet it is profound truth and wisdom, the first profound and mature religious choice is to accept this unwelcome truth. And the second profound and mature religious choice is to accept another truth. Each of us, all of us, can grow in compassion and in our capacity to serve through the misery as well as through the delight. A example. I have friends whose lives were struck with the misery of the birth of a profoundly retarded child. This family tragedy was difficult for everyone involved, difficult practically and emotionally. Difficult as it was, they had a profound choice to make. Would they allow their lives to be diminished and destroyed by this misery? And this was their choice. Their answer was no. And part of the reason for their no was the sweet delight that this child brought to their family life. This was the second profound truth. Retardation was difficult, but it was not a total disaster. And there was a third profound truth. This family came to understand that their experience of misery and delight provided them a unique opportunity for compassion and service. Who can better understand and respond to those suffering the misery of a similar life situation? Those who have had a child die know this profound truth. Those who have survived a debilitating and life-threatening illness know it. All of us know, or can know, for none of our lives is free of misery and tragedy. But in our suffering itself lies the capacity for greater empathy and greater compassion and greater service. And when this we rightly know, safely through the world we go. The profound religious testimony is this: love calls us to the things of this world. Bless what there is for being, and we were made for joy and world. Herein lies the world's gravity and its grace. Religiously grave, because life's woe is as fundamental and inescapable as its joy. And religiously gracious, because love calls us to turn all life's gifts, joy and woe alike, to richer and more abundant life. Amen.
And we have some time for the polylog today. The ushers will bring microphones to anyone who would like to speak. Please tell us your name. What you're thinking.
My name is Kathy, and I just wanted to share an image that I had as you were reading the poem about laundry. I think I like to see laundry flapping. And the first thing that came to my mind was our daughter used to live in central Wisconsin. There were a lot of Amish people around there. And we drive around and we see laundry hanging from a window really up high out to the barn, and it was clothing for all ages, and, you know, it was flapping and so on and so forth, and that was really nice. But then I thought, you know, all that laundry was really sort of dark and dreary. It was mostly all brown. So next popped into my mind was laundry that's strung between balconies like in Chinese cities, and that's really colorful and, you know, great. But it's a bit cramped. It's like maybe 20 pieces going from one balcony to the other. And then the next thing that popped into my mind was Tibetan prayer flags that are strung between, you know, temples and far out, and those are colorful and they're long, and that's the image that I decided to settle on, and I just thought it was interesting that they were prayer flags. So, thank you.
I'm Angel. I have a daughter is quadriplegic. I have a daughter who's classified as retarded, developmentally disabled, I prefer. And I've gone through places where I've nearly been dead and recovered. And people look at my life and think, oh my God, this must be so difficult. And to me, it's not. We have a lot of happiness and joy, and we joke, and Sam, who's in the wheelchair, and I even joke about, what are you going to do, get up and hit me? You know, I mean, you know, so we make fun of what we can, and it's all about attitude. And interestingly enough, this morning I was watching, I always watch CBS Sunday Morning, and they're doing this thing about, does attitude help you get well when you have an illness or whatever? And the people who were saying, no, it doesn't have anything to do with it, looked very unhappy. And those who said it did, who have recovered and said their positive thinking has helped them through it, look pretty darn happy. You know, and I just feel that that attitude of lightheartedness and happiness and all that makes life easier. And I did hear a study lately that said happy people live longer. But in kind, it's just for unhappy people, it probably just seems longer. So attitude really is everything, and being grateful for what you do have and having a positive outlook on things, you know, like I know my Gracie will be able to live on her own someday. I just know it. And I know that Sam will walk a little bit more than she does now. She walks a little. Wasn't supposed to, but she does because she knew she would. She'll have a life. She'll get married. She'll probably have a baby. It'll just, things for them will just take a little longer, and we'll just enjoy that journey in the meantime. And I just think that life is good, and I'm grateful for having what I have. Like right now, my boyfriend, his daughter was hit by a train and died when she was 5 or 6, and he thinks he has it easier because he doesn't have to watch the suffering. I think I have it easier because I still have my child. And so it's like his attitude helps him and mine helps me. Everybody has their own thing, whatever helps them. Thanks.
My name's Lynn, and thank you, Jim, for the sermon. It reminds me of, took part in the Hub of Happiness workshop here at church with Elizabeth Lewis, and you know, she talked about the good things that happen in life and the not so good things, and what do we do with the not so good things. One of the exercises she had us do was think of a challenge and, you know, what, and then ask the question, what is the gift that it gives you? And then, you know, write about that. So literally just sit there and write about it. And it's hard to think about our challenges sometimes in life, but I mean, I sat there and picked one and wrote about it, and I was smiling by the end. You know, there are gifts in life's woes and challenges. So thank you.
Thank you all for sharing your thoughts. And now we'll have the offertory. The ushers will bring the baskets. You may, there are many of us who donate on a monthly basis. Any guests here, please don't consider yourself in need to contribute unless you just want to. Thank you.
Thank you.
affirmation number 468 in your books. And we will say it together. Mindful of truth, ever exceeding. Oh, am I too soon? Mindful of truth. Let's all say it together. Oh, hey, how about 68? Sorry. Okay. Sorry. We need one another, and thank you for correcting me. We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted.
We need
one another when we are in trouble and afraid. We need one another when we are in despair, in temptation, and need to be recalled to our best selves again. We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone. We need one another in the hour of success, when we look for someone to share our triumphs. We need one another in the hour of defeat, when with encouragement we might endure and stand again. We need one another when we come to die and would have gentle hands prepare us for our journey. All our lives we are in need, and others are in need of us. And now we will rise as you're willing and able to sing our closing hymn, number 322 in the books. First three verses.
This time and place to return to the world of our many ways. If we found compassion here, let us take it with us into the world, a world that cries for compassion. If we found understanding here, let us take it into a world that begs for understanding. If we found acceptance here, let us take it with us into a world that yearns for acceptance. If we found challenge here, let us take it with us into a world that asks for challenge. Whatever we found here that sustains the human spirit, let us take it with us into a world desperate for these nurturing gifts. Amen.